Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's a minute past the hour on this, the 11th day of June 2015, quite possibly the most sweltering day we have thus far had in the hills and hollers of almost level west by cold Virginia stand. It is a toasty 95 degrees here in the Horn Studio Sauna, and I can feel every degree of it. Whew! Gonna be a hot one. I think it already is. But I'll try to muddle through, at least until such time as, you know, the heat frustration kicks in. This is, of course, the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to wander by and join in the multimedia real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Good evening. Good evening to longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. Good evening also to Texas B. First ones in get a ring of the official cowbell, the Horn cowbell. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find access to the Contribute tab, which, in fact, is the portal to the PayPal account. And thanks for going out to our buddy Horst in Taiwan. And thanks for going out to Kevin in New York as well. We are two-thirds of the way toward the evening's fundraising goal, which gives us a little bit of an opportunity to get a leg up on tomorrow, get a little leg up on the next week, with any luck at all. Because, well, every month brings its own set of bills, and they are out there in rich abundance. So $50 finishes the evening, $250 finishes the week, and we get started on next week. Don't think just because we've gotten a leg up on fundraising for the evening, we don't need you. We always, always need you. Because, you know, we're not like West Virginia Public Radio, which has to have $160,000 by the end of June. I don't know if I'd ever have the nerve to say something like that. Yeesh. Good evening, Anatole. Welcome to the conversation. Anatole just popping into the Horn chat room. Anyway, if you want to be a part of keeping this effort on the air, and we, all of us, hope you will be, then the easiest way to go about doing that is to go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, the tab Contribute, and fill out only so many of those fields as are necessary to move you to the next page. Hint, the really pushy ones aren't. It doesn't. Just get to the next screen where you do all your PayPal stuff. If you would like, you can always set up a recurring subscription contribution. Those are awfully helpful, and they are. It's nice to know that those things will kind of be there through the course of the evening, and it is very much appreciated. In point of fact, thanks go out for to Tony. and to Linda and to Dennis, my grass mowing podcasting buddy from Kentucky, all of whose subscriptions landed today. Thank you very, very kindly. So, and then the mailing address. If you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, the address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley. I said the 1038 North Eisenhower Drive part, right? Yeah. PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And checks and money orders should be made payable not to Bob Kincaid, but to The Horn. Thank you. I think the heat's already getting to me. Thank you very kindly. Jeremy in Vermont, noting loud and clear on TuneIn, Bob. I appreciate it. And this, of course, is Thorn in the Side Thursday. It's a day that is reserved for true manifestations of what passes for right-wing genius, super genius in this country. And sometimes not even right-wing genius. Sometimes it's just plain old garden variety stupidity. Hello, Fallujah, my old friend. Guess what? We're going back to Iraq some more. I guess you've seen the news, right? 450 American... Where have we heard this phrase before? Military advisors. Yes, military advisors. 450 military advisors have been deployed to the blood-sodden sands of Iraq. Now, what are those 450 military advisors going to do? They're going to do what thousands upon tens of thousands of American soldiers before them couldn't do, and that is teach the Iraqis to fight for themselves. Oh, but this time we'll get it right. This time Lucy won't pick the football up just as Charlie Brown goes to kick it. Oh, no, this time those 450 brave American warriors will get the job done. And the Iraqi army will find itself suddenly inspired to go forth and defeat ISIL, which is largely made up of the old Iraqi army. Wait a minute. Let's see. This is one of those moments where I miss Mr. Stress, Bill. Didn't our first forays into Vietnam start with about the same number of military advisors? Yeah, I think so. This might be a time to get the peace marchers out in the streets now, before we need to surge from the 450 to 450,000. Now, bear in mind, I suppose that the next year we'll see a wide variety of, John Kasich is in the presidential bid, the contender, clown car, clown bus, clown train now. Who isn't running for president as a Republican? Oh, Professor Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, has not yet decided that America must have his wisdom and intellect to lead it into the third decade of the 21st century, but well, and Mussolini, Caribou Barbie, she's not in there yet. Grumpy John McCain has his surrogate in the form of Lindsey Graham. Lindsey, who is scared of everything. Lindsey is trying to be a unifying, healing force within the Republican Party. Because he said, of course, Caitlyn Jenner identifies not only as a woman, but as a Republican woman, which is proof that she is still pre-op, because maybe if she had a vagina, she would actually care about what Republicans want to do to control it. But never mind, that was mean. Lindsay said Caitlyn Jenner is welcome in the Lindsay for President campaign, and said he's never walked in Caitlyn Jenner's shoes, but they are lovely ones. Manolo Blahniks or Jimmy Choo's or whatever it is they are. And has also begun answering questions since he would be our first bachelor president since James Buchanan. That worked out well. Civil War. Most people think Abraham Lincoln. The Civil War begins and ends. The Civil War begins with the dithering inactivity of James Buchanan and his dear friend William D. Vane King of Alabama, who at the time, according to historical sources, would have made Lindsay look positively butch. He wasn't a Republican, he was actually a Democrat. The conservative white closet is very historically deep. But anyway, most of the problems led up and created the Civil War happened on James Buchanan's watch, our first bachelor president. But anyway, Lindsay was asked how he would go about, I mean, what about the First Lady? And no, there was no suggestion that maybe Caitlyn Jenner could have, no. He said he would have a rotating First Lady. I'll bet. Said maybe his sister would do it. But anyway, Lindsay wants to send your children to the Iraq. And of course, Scott Walker wants to send your children to the Iraq, such as. And I'm sure Rick Perry wants to send your children to the Iraq, and everybody but Rand Paul wants to send your children to the Iraq, and Rand Paul might decide he wants to, if it looks like that's how the political wind is a-blowing in the Republican universe. The question for me then is, I'd love to hear Secretary Senator Clinton and her position on whether or not we need to be sending 450 military advisors or 45,000 or 450,000 to the Iraq, such as. Because I'm pretty sure I know what Bernie Sanders' answer is, and I'm guessing you probably have a pretty good idea about that too, which is a big part of why I support Senator Sanders, being rather unequivocal as he is on not going in and making a bad situation worse by mucking it up a little bit more. The press release from the White House on this auspicious... J. Cruzen noting, no, Rick Perry wants to send your children to Europe. He said it today. Not quite sure why. I'm not quite sure he knows why either. All the wire services have the story about American military advisors heading to the Iraq. It was announced yesterday, of course. There's already 3,100 American service men and women in Iraq. And the idea is to open a new... what's called operations center that's closer to the fighting in Anbar province. In announcing the troop insertion, the White House announced in a prepared statement To improve the capabilities and effectiveness of partners on the ground, our partners in peace, the President authorized the deployment of up to 450 additional U.S. military personnel to train, advise, and assist Iraqi security forces, including the expedited delivery of essential equipment and materiel to Iraqi forces so that the Iraqi forces can more efficiently throw them on the ground and run away, leaving them to be picked up by ISIS. No, I'm sorry. The expedited delivery of essential equipment and materiel to Iraqi forces, including Kurdish Peshmerga troops and Sunni fighters operating under Iraqi command, the White House said. No, well, it ain't funny. There's no real humor in this. Not much. There's not even much wiggle room for sarcasm. We appear on the brink of not just engaging in a mistake, but doing that worst of mistake-making, making the same one twice. Now, of course, we don't have conscription, we don't have selective service, we don't have a draft. So that means that none of those college kids out there or graduating high school seniors have to worry about things like high draft numbers or low draft numbers or calls to draft boards or anything like that. This is strictly a military that is made up of largely people who have no other choice. People who grow up in rural West Virginia and only want to be a school teacher, but join the National Guards and learn to drive a truck and wind up driving it in Iraq. People who have been trained in the Guard and Reserve to drive tanks who wind up walking foot patrols. Because, well, you know, it's just the National Guard. We'll use them and waste them as we see fit. No, they're not being sent yet. But I tell you what, if I was a member of the National Guard or the Reserves, I'd keep me a bag packed. And I'd really, really, really get nervous come about, oh, January of 2017, on the odd chance that a Republican becomes president. So we have that on this thorn in the side Thursday, and that's a great big thorn. That's a thorn like like something out of a science fiction movie. And it is. I can't imagine what's going with this news. I can't imagine what must be going through the hearts and minds of people with loved ones in the active duty military, or the Guard, or the Reserves. Yeah. Because the story, another story I have, is actually a week or so old. Via AOL's news service, the United States has quietly started delivering promised arms for Iraqi soldiers from a $1.6 billion fund approved by Congress last year. Pentagon said long-awaited shipment from the Iraq Train and Equip Fund, ITEF, started being fielded about 2 weeks ago and was moving as fast as possible. Officials noted extensive previous arms transfers under different U.S. authorities. This is the first planned unit equipment issues for the coming weeks, which will include Peshmerga units. You know, whenever we start funneling money and equipment to foreign fighters who will probably not be very good at using them, we always like to use the fancy word, oh, they're the Peshmerga. I mean, you can always trust your Peshmerga with your high-tech weaponry because they're Peshmerga. Jay Cruz is observing, you know, if we just went to all renewables for energy and took Elon Musk's open source technology, all we would need to be would be the lithium from our new friends in Afghanistan. Then we could tell the entire Middle East to fuck themselves. What a lovely day that would be, too. Y'all just settle your disputes among yourselves. We'll be over here reaping the benefits of the sun and the wind. But that wouldn't be good for ExxonMobil or Royal Dutch Shell or BP or any of the other outfits. No. Blood is good business. Get your point, Jay Cruzan, but I think you get mine as well. Irish Dave pointing out, so it's the real estate theory of warfare, location, location, and location. By the way, Jimmy Dick Perry has three reasons to send the troops to the Europe, but he forgets them right now. Two also, 450 troops is 900 boots on the ground if they just stand around. Note coming from Carol Baker. Interstate 70 was backed up for 20 miles from Kansas City to Odessa with a military convoy, 40 miles an hour the whole trip in 100-degree heat with no air conditioning. The military's gearing up. Big trucks, MRAPs, Humvees. And I've seen them, I've even seen them moving around on here on the highways of almost level West by Cole, Virginia stand. Some hillbilly going to go die in desert. And after our last misadventure in Iraq and Afghanistan, ongoing, of course, we've got a whole bunch of concrete interstate bridges that are named after Private this, and Sergeant that, and Lieutenant so-and-so, because that's the best thing we can think to do to note the meaningless wasting of a human life. Name a concrete bridge out after him that's been in place for 50 years. Didn't have a name on it, though, so we'll name it after that kid who got blown into a million pieces by an IED somewhere outside the Green Zone one day. I guess that's supposed to be an honor. It was hard to read that news. And I recognize, of course, that there aren't going to be, and really, why should there be? Oh, I am just a little ray of sunshine this evening. There are hundreds of thousands of people in the streets of various countries and capitals before the United States illegally and without justification invaded and attacked the people of Iraq. Look how much good it did. Lord God. So we have that to begin the evening. Sorry, we didn't have any funnies. And I might be a little bit slow this evening. About 25 minutes past the hour, by the way. I might be a little slow this evening, simply, well, temperature's going up, not down. Nice. Oh, let's see. Can we call this good news? Coming out of the judicial system in Cleveland today, a ruling from Judge Ronald B. Adrine, A-D-R-I-N-E, saying that probable cause exists to charge Timothy Lohman and Frank Garnback with crimes in relationship to the killing of Tamir Rice. It's interesting that this process had to be begun by ordinary citizens. Not by internal affairs or not by the prosecuting attorney. And no. There's a law still on the books in Ohio, and what do you want to bet this one's going to go bye-bye pretty quick? That says that ordinary citizens who are informed of the facts in a case can begin by filing an affidavit with the court asking for prosecution of a crime. Judge Ronald Adrine said this court determines that complaints should be filed by the prosecutor of the city of Cleveland and or the Cuyahoga County prosecutor. Troublesome language, that should business. Should is not shall. May is not must. It's entirely possible that the prosecuting attorney could entirely ignore the order. Well, there's not going to be a preliminary charge. Oh, no. Timothy J. McGinty is the prosecuting attorney of Cuyahoga County, Ohio. And Timothy J. McGinty said, as with all other fatal use of deadly force cases involving law enforcement officers, this case will go to the grand jury. Hello, Ferguson. You see, the judge refused to issue an arrest warrant. The probable cause found includes charges for Officer Lohman of murder, involuntary manslaughter, reckless homicide, or dereliction of duty. Officer Garnback, the judge said, can be charged with negligent homicide or dereliction of duty. The Reverend Jawanza K. Colvin, according to the New York Times account, says it is a step, and it is a step that tells those who have continued to work for justice in the criminal justice system that all lives do matter. On the other hand, Walter Madison, lawyer for the Rice family, says it's a small step toward justice, but it is a step. But Timothy J. McGinty has said that no arrest warrants will be filed, that they'll just present it to the grand jury when they get around to it. Don't hold your breath. Goodness me. Ah, let's see, though. Some real right-wing thorn-in-the-side stuff. It's been a while since we spent any time with Michael the Savage Wiener. So I guess we're due. Savage used to be one of the top one, two, or three, or four, or five right-wing gas bags in the country. And even he loudly proclaimed that Glenn Beck had stolen his shtick. He's still not happy about it. And desperate for attention, you see. And they all have to one-up each other. They all have to say, if one says something crazy, the next one has to say something crazier, and that leads everybody else to aim for craziest. Enter the Savage Wiener in his program yesterday.
So who gets invited to the White House next, says an emailer? A head of state or Caitlyn Jenner? Who gets invited to the White House next? A head of state or Caitlyn Jenner with the thin man? And how soon after he's out of office does he give an exclusive interview to Salon about his, let us say, his interests? His interests in that direction.
The thin man is apparently Barack Obama. You have to work within the metaphors that these gas giants surround themselves. So do you get the upshot of what he's just suggested?
Let us say his interests. His exclusive interview to Salon about his... let us say his interests.
You hear the innuendo, his interests, President Obama's interests, nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
His interests in that direction. Then he could be the first, president, whatever.
Yeah, because if you're a black guy, you're president, whatever.
855-407-282. This is the Savage Nation. What do you want to talk about? Bullying? Let's go for it. We're living in a country that's we're bullied day and night. Bully. Obama's whole M.O. is bullying. He got where he is by bullying everybody. Oh, you don't like me? You must be a racist. Oh, you don't like me? You must be a pig capitalist. Oh, you don't like Michelle? You must be a sexist.
Oh, well, yeah. Because Barack Obama's been so hard on the capitalists. Does this twit even look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average? S&P 500? Huh? Yeah, I tell you what, he's really bringing the old Stalinist, Maoist boot right down on the neck of Wall Street, isn't he? Thank you for the update. Going back to the issue of police shootings of unarmed African Americans. Jay Cruzen letting me know that Michael Slager has been indicted for murder in the shooting of Walter Scott. I'm waiting now. Jay Cruzen says, the kicker is dots, many dots. Fight faster, Jay Cruzen. We'll get back to the Savage Wiener in a minute. The kicker is, if convicted, it will be the first time ever that a white police officer has been convicted for the murder of a black man. The first time ever. And you know, that's kind of like the first time, the odds on that are like the first time that a number 16 seed in the NCAA tournament upsets the number one seed. Hasn't happened yet. Probably isn't going to happen anytime soon. If nothing else, Jay Cruzen, don't you think that if it looks like a pretty clear-cut conviction, that a plea deal will be entered? Yeah. So, yeah, the savage wiener thinks that Barack Obama is gay, but he doesn't have, or maybe he's trans, but the savage wiener doesn't quite have the guts or gumption to say that outright.
Oh, you don't believe in Michelle? You must be a racist. As they jet off on Air Force One and Two, they're going to constrain the carbon emissions on everyone else's plane but theirs. What a bunch of phony hypocrites. Boo on them. I'm sick of them. It's like two gangster liars took over the country.
I'm sick of them. Do you hear me? Sick of them. I loved George Bush, though. And Dick Cheney was nothing like a gangster lawyer. He was just a gangster.
Oh, you don't believe in Michelle? You must be a racist. As they jet off on Air Force One and Two, they're going to constrain the carbon emissions on everyone else's plane but theirs. What a bunch of phony hypocrites. Boo on them. I'm sick of them. It's like two gangster liars took over the country. I was supposed to sit here and not say a word about it. I feel like something broke in me today, like a dam broke. I can't take it anymore. He's a liar. He's a BS artist. And a criminal as far as I'm concerned. Broke our borders, broke our language, broke our culture.
Yeah, okay, Michael. Take your medicine, would you, buddy? It doesn't even play anymore, does it? It just sounds kind of pitiful. He sounds like the ranting old guy down at the end of the bar. And hey, Harry, can you turn the jukebox up a little bit? The savage wiener's getting a little noisy. Mm-hmm. But he's trying. God bless him, the savage wiener is trying. He's trying to get his groove back. He's trying to get his audience back. I don't know. You tell me if you think it's going to work.
The Middle East is burning. Everyone's fearing it's 1914. Everyone now fears a war, a giant war, pitting Shia Muslims against Sunni.
How can that be a giant war? I mean, okay. Granted, it's been tried before. You know who the first country was to try to leverage Muslim military passion alongside religious mania? I mean, he mentioned 1914, and it just kind of popped into my mind. That would be Germany during the First World War. Of course, they had their new allies, the Ottoman Empire, the Turks. And they began, when they would take, and there were a lot. Of course, the First World War is seen as this very white affair. It wasn't. You remember how we've talked in the past about the shock and the disgust and the cries of, well, that's just not fair, when the Union Army began arming freed ex-slaves and putting Union uniforms on them and letting them take an active role in fighting for their own freedom? Yeah. Well, something similar, but not very, happened during the First World War. The British brought in colonial troops from India, and the French brought in troops from their African colonial occupations, and the Germans went wild. Nah, they didn't go wild, but they complained bitterly that the rules of civilized warfare were being violated by bringing those savages into their perfectly nice little war. But two could play at that game, and so when Muslims would be taken prisoners, the Germans actually had a program that they spent a considerable amount of resources on, in which they attempted to turn Muslim prisoners of war against the colonial powers occupying their home countries. In point of fact, when the Turks joined in the First World War alliance with Germany, there was a big ceremony in a mosque in Istanbul, which up until that, which was still at that point in time called Constantinople, even by the Turks. And a great, and the sword of the prophet was tendered to the sultan, caliph, I'm not sure what, the headman of the Ottoman Empire, and he then declared jihad against Britain and France and the Entente powers. And that is how the idea of leveraged holy war enters the modern era. It was the model for what St. Ronnie did when he gunned up the Mujahideen, whom did Reagan refer to the Mujahideen as like the Founding Fathers, or was that the Nicaraguan Contras, or did he do it twice with Ronnie? Kind of hard to recall, but that's where it all begins. And so here we are again. Damn, I thought we were going to get away from the Holy Rock thing. Here we are again, 2015, thinking that we can take tribal differences and... Oh, God. This ain't going to end well, is it? You know, I want to be wrong. I want to be wrong. I want the... The 3,100 military men and women who are in Iraq now, and the 450 more who are going to go and be advisors. And just as a reminder, an advisor dead in the heat for in the Iraqi desert heat for 3 days smells every bit the same as a dead soldier does. And the buzzards and the vultures make no real distinction either. I want to be wrong. I want us to go over there. I would like to think that we're going to go over there, and we've really got a plan this time for teaching the Iraqis how to fight for themselves and actually hold their rifles instead of dropping them and running away. But as you know, you can hope in one hand and in the other, and, well, find out pretty quickly which one fills up first. Yeah. History. Ain't it a booger? But, just the same, we know whose fault it is. Well, at least if we're listening to that ranting maniac, the Savage Wiener.
Everyone fears that except the sorority that's causing it. Everyone fears it except Daddy Longlegs in the White House. The amazing, shriveling president. The man shrinking right in front of our eyes. Losing weight. I'm actually worried for him. I wish him no harm. I just wish they would impeach him and arrest him for the crimes against America. Why?
Which crime? Really? Which crimes against America? I mean, I've got my own issues about mountaintop removal and the poisoning of vast swaths of central Appalachia, but I don't think you can lay that entirely at Barack Obama's doorstep. He is not, as I mentioned last night, it's like the cab driver in D.C. said, he's not a wizard. Not a magician. His crimes against America.
is he losing so much weight? What's wrong with him? What illness does he have? Am I, as a citizen, not allowed to ask? The man's suit size has gone down about five sizes. It looks like it's gone down three or four sizes in the last year. What's going on with Obama? I'm not allowed to ask, right? The king has no clothes. I didn't notice that.
That's twice he said he's not allowed to ask, and yet he asked. And here it is, 6:46 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3:46 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, fully 24 hours since that question was asked twice, and the statement was made that he was not allowed to ask twice. And Michael the Savage Wiener has still not been hauled off to a FEMA re-education camp somewhere in the desert wastes of West Texas in the caverns beneath a hollowed-out old Walmart, as part, of course, of Jade Helm, during which he would be re-educated via the Common Core. Yeah. The problem with people who don't learn from history is that those of us who have must suffer through their stupidity. And hey, the Savage Wiener ain't eating beans. He gets paid to be that stupid.
I didn't know that he's shriveling up and shrinking. What's wrong with him? Does he have an illness? I hope not. I pray not. I hope that he gets well. What illness does he have?
There's really medication for this, isn't there? Yeah.
I know he has a mental illness of progressivism. I know that that's an illness that's incurable. But maybe the physical illness can be treated by the geniuses at the hospitals there. Unbelievable to me. He has no complete ISIS strategy. He's waiting for it. President of the United States, most powerful military in the world, he has no complete ISIS strategy. I guess the girl who writes it for him was away on vacation with her wife. It hasn't been written yet. When she comes back from the honeymoon with her wife, she can write the ISIS strategy, her and her girlfriend.
One is really rather severely limited in the things one can say after about that sort of snide bullshit. But one of the things one can say is,
you dick!
Yes. Because it comes in ever so handy. So, there you have it. Barack Obama is really thin because he's committed crimes against America, and as soon as he's done being president, he's going to have a sex change operation. This, of course, is professional broadcasting and deep thinking in the GOP. Note coming in from Steve in China. I guess one question has been answered of late. Once the power of the vote has been lost, the power of the grand jury to merely seek some kind of legal prosecution is soon to follow. I used to suggest to acquaintances of mine that the most important civil prerogative of any citizen was the expectation of perhaps sitting on a grand jury if called. Almost invariably, I was corrected or reprimanded with a reminder that my vote was more important than any such nonsense. I don't know, but answer me this. Since when has the office of prosecutor become so much a matter of politics, more so than the seeking of something even remotely near the idea of justice? Oh, that's been going on for a while. Prosecutors are, first and foremost, political animals. All the more so, because unlike the fire department, you can't wheel the new law books that the prosecutor's office got down Main Street in the middle of the county fair like you can the new fire truck. And what this points up, of course, is that what one really needs, we really, really do need, an independent, nationwide legal task force who is charged with nothing but taking over and investigating claims against police for brutality and, you know, murder. Because all prosecutors work very closely with their police forces. even if, let's say, the prosecuting attorney of Cuyahoga County says, you know, I got a conflict of interest here. Best for me not to even think about this. Let's get the prosecutor from Hamilton County to come up and prosecute this case. Well, if the prosecutor from Hamilton County goes back to Hamilton County having just rung up a couple of the boys in blue, the boys in blue in Hamilton County aren't going to trust him anymore either. Now, are they? And when you are dependent upon the work of the police force for your continued both professional and political success, well, you see how it plays out. The asshat in St. Louis County comes to mind. Note coming in from Luta, Savage Wiener. That guy is a complete asshole. Please don't torture us with his voice again, pretty please. Oh, we haven't had the Savage Wiener for a very long time, Luta. And we may not for a very long time to come, because he's just sort of, I mean, he talks about Obama disappearing. He's disappeared. He's one step away from hosting the swap meet of the air in Busted Knuckle. Ray with tongue firmly planted in cheek. Sex change for Barry? Don't tell Bill Cosby where Obama's moving, or at least advise the president to avoid Jell-O pudding. And I don't know, Carol. I honest to God don't know. Carol asks, what's their obsession with same sex? They think about it more than my gay friends. And that's the absolute truth. We've got a sizable contingent of the of gay folks in the Horn Family Commune congregation. Chime in. I mean, do you get up in the morning thinking about sex? Standing there shaving, think about sex. Fix your breakfast, think about sex. Coffee, sex. Lunch, sex. Take the car for an oil change, sex. Walk the dog, sex. No, I'm guessing you don't. But damned if the right wing doesn't. They've become a self-parody. They've become a clip from Life of Brian.
Sex, sex, sex. That's all you ever think about. Is it too big? Is it too little? Will the girls like it?
Love a big nose, Mom.
None of your cheek.
It's stunning the degree to which they think about nothing but sex. We could make an entire program of it most every day. Just in case you were wondering, you know, we were talking about the Mark of the Beast just last night, and we were wondering if Franklin Graham somehow surreptitiously has it. Rick Joyner's got it nailed down about this Mark of the Beast business. Oh, yes, he does. He hosts something called Prophetic Perspective on Current Events. And he's all worried about the upcoming marriage equality ruling going not the way he wants it to go.
How would I, you know, link the Supreme Court decision on same-sex marriage to the Mark of the Beast? And I think it's already been linked. Now, let me say this. I am not saying that Supreme Court decision is the Mark of the Beast.
Well, that clears that up now, doesn't it? I feel so much better now. So, same-sex marriage is not the mark of the beast. Everybody that gets all gay married up is not going to automatically be unable to buy or sell and have to flee to caves in the hills when the tribulations come. That has got to be reassuring. I know Edward in Dallas feels better already. But, because there's always a but when they get to fulminating about the Homer sectional marriage.
Is the mark of the beast. What I'm saying is, it is a remarkable parallel and does everything that it says the mark of the beast will do if they come down saying that, you know, same-sex marriage is a constitutional right. You know, as we've already seen, businesses, people being put out of business because they would not violate their conscience based in their belief in what God has said in His Word about this issue and about homosexuality, and because they said they could not violate that, which was a religious conviction, they've been put out of business. They can no longer buy, sell, or trade. And that's...
Wow. He's profound.
That's what happens if you refuse to take the mark of the beast. We may be facing that situation, and if this is not the biblical mark of the beast from that John wrote about in Revelation, it's at least a trial run.
I thought that would have been the civil rights movement. Because, you know, a lot of businesses, rather than knuckle under to the jackbooted heel of the government and their sickening laws about freedom, chose to shut down things like lunch counters. That would seem to be your trial run. Thanks to our good friends at Right Wing Watch. I don't know how they do it. But they can't... Why can't they trust their God to just get things right? I mean, isn't faith part of it? But to be fair, it's not always Homer sectional sexy time that they're worried about. White Wing Rabbi Daniel Lappin is thinking about the lady parts, too. Mm-hmm. White Wing Rabbi Daniel Lappin sat down for a little tete-a-tete with the Beckerhead. I haven't issued a hockey puck warning yet, have I? No, I haven't.
Something that's required in the Torah, and I mean, this is something I recommend literally for absolutely every married couple. It's a commandment only for Jews, but that is that marital intimacy is suspended once a month for a period of time. And I mean, obviously, it's difficult, particularly for guys, obviously.
It's difficult, particularly for guys, obviously. What about the woman with the cramping? And the PMS? And just, you know, the general bodily fluids one has to deal with. Oh, but it's difficult, particularly for the guy, particularly. You can just hear this guy getting up every morning and praying that prayer about how, thank God I was not born a woman, can't you?
...bit of time. And I mean, obviously, it's difficult, particularly for guys, obviously. But to be forced to interact with your wife non-physically for a week is really very valuable.
What, Edith, huh?
To be... forced? Well, why don't you just send her out to the red tent, Rabbi? It's really very valuable to have to treat your wife as something besides a sex object. Actually, yes, it very much is. One can learn a lot.
Well, let's not stop now. Let's continue the clip, shall we? Oh, clip, clip.
To be in a situation where not every issue can be resolved with an arm around the shoulder and a kiss.
Wait a minute. There can't be any arms around shoulders or kissing during that time of the month. Bloody hell! I mean, what? Do you have to stand across the room? Mercy sakes! I mean, do you have to speak to each other across mountaintops with megaphones? It's going to create rather a bull market in mountaintops and megaphones now, isn't it? I say.
But it needs to be resolved with words, and communication is enormously valuable. And why is this there? Well, because anybody with any sensitivity recognizes that the good Lord created men with an infinite capacity to produce seed at almost any age.
You can ask me. I'm older than hell, and I produced a couple of little seedlings this morning. Every now and then my goodly lady wife makes my withered old member jump like a snake in a microwave. She really does. Now that that time of the month doesn't come around anymore, well, that infinite seed making does come in handy from time to time. Although it's a bit of a problem now because we're incapable of producing children. So that means that Yahweh isn't particularly thrilled about us having sex anymore. So she keeps blaming him when she says, "Oh, get your bloody paws off of me." It's just difficult business, you know, following the Lord.
Whereas he chose to create women with an absolute finite, limited number of eggs. And so the loss of an egg every month for any sensitive woman is sad because it's one less opportunity for life.
Yeah, that's what we taught our daughters when they began to menstruate. You should be sad this time every month because you should be pregnant. That's one less opportunity you'll have to produce life. Because that's what we wanted. That's what we needed. A 12-year-old daughter with a growing fetus inside of her, our grandchildren. Oh, mercy sakes. Oh, ladies. Any of you. Stay straight. Don't care. When your monthly cycle rolled around, were you sitting in sackcloth and ashes and saying, "Oh, woe is me, here I sit, shedding the line of my endometrium, and my egg is gone to waste. Oh, why does God hate me?" Okay, little check-in from Carol. Trust me, I never wept for my sorry discarded fucking eggs. Oh, but Rabbi Lappin is, Carol. Rabbi Lappin is. He spends most every day weeping over all those unfertilized eggs. Really? But understand, yes, there was a qualifier put on the sad women.
He chose to create women with an absolute finite, limited number of eggs. And so the loss of an egg every month for any sensitive woman is...
For any sensitive woman. Now, Carol Baker, obviously you are insensitive. And so are all the... But we're working hard here in Appalachia, Rabbi Lappin. We are. We got all kinds... And not just Appalachia, Georgia Stan, Alabama Stan, Mississippi Stan, Louisiana Stan, Texas Stan, Oklahoma Stan, Kansas Stan, Tennessee Stan, Arkansas Stan, Talibandiana. They're working hard to make sure that their little teenage daughters don't have to sensitively grieve over lost eggs. Did this Nijinsky really... just say that every time a woman doesn't get pregnant, it's a bad thing? I wouldn't want to see what would happen if he was in the room with Agnes Viking Warrior Princess. I may just have to play this clip for her after the program's over this evening. And I know what the script, if we were scripting it. Why that? Bob, no. And it'll just be a string of not really words for a while. Well, go on. Let's hear about these sensitive women.
Any age, whereas he chose to create women with an absolute finite, limited number of eggs. And so the loss of an egg every month for any sensitive woman is sad because it's one less opportunity for life. And so foolish and insensitive people say, oh, you know, it's just a hormonal imbalance. It isn't. It's a genuine, authentic sadness. Which
said the guy who has never had a period. Or endometriosis. Or a pap smear. Or a transvaginal ultrasound. Or generally experienced the glory of stirrups. And that really creepy duck-billed tool thingy that, Brother Deacon Asa with a piece of advice. Bob, you obviously haven't read the good rabbi's book on the biblical principles of becoming obscenely wealthy, or you wouldn't be saying what you're saying. This is like the quiverful movement with a yarmulke. This is the quiverful movement with Hava Nagila for a soundtrack.
It's one less opportunity for life. And so foolish and insensitive people say, oh, you know, it's just a hormonal imbalance.
Foolish and insensitive people. That's right. Agnes and I were foolish recently for looking at each other upon the graduation of our youngest, our daughter, from high school, saying, hey, I think by the weight of statistical evidence, we got something right. We had three daughters. We got them all the way to adulthood without any of them having a baby in West Virginia. That's a big damn deal. Most of the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered parents down at the Baptist Holiness Tabernacle can't say that. Yeah, women folks, you really are in a conundrum, aren't you? If you're weepy, you're hysterical. If you're not weepy, you're insensitive and foolish. Can't win. Not with these jackasses. There we were being insensitive and foolish, thinking it was a good thing that our children weren't having children. But then again, this guy lives in the goddamn Stone Age, and the girls are supposed to be getting knocked up and sold off for any number of sheep, camels, goats, chickens, no pigs, from the moment they first bleed onto the straw in the red tent. Because they, like the aforesaid camels and goats and sheep and chickens, no pigs, are just chattel animals.
Isn't. It's a genuine, authentic sadness which suffuses any sensitive woman at the loss of an egg. I mean, it's not the end of the world, but it's sad. And
well,
so
I've never thought of it that way, that it is actually a God-given sadness.
Well, but now you have, Glenn Beck, and I can't wait for you to go home and tell your sister wife it's time, because you're about the same age as me, aren't you there, Glennie? Yeah, she's going to love you. Mm-hmm. You know it. God help them, that is all they think about is sex. course, there's just, well. Oh, you really dodged one, Luda. I forgot about having this one in the stack. Michael Savage.
Hillary Clinton waging war on white people with a blood libel. It's a blood libel, I'm telling you. I don't know. She with a cankles.
Won't do it to you, though. Why? Because I care. Really, really, I do. I care. So we will take a break. And, of course, the lines are always open for your input, your observations on the news of the day. Two phone lines for you and one Skype line. Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn from anywhere on the planet. Bob Kincaid Horn. If you've never sent me a contact request and you want to get involved in the program that way, just do it and we'll get going right straight away. BobKincaidHorn. Phone lines, we got, like I said, two of them, 304-574-81. The heat's getting to me. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN, that's the stress line. The other line, 304-574-8178. Wow. Yeah. And you can get through, and, well, conversation radio is what it's all about here. We're still looking to finish up fundraising for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 11th day of June, 2015. We're going to take the top of the hour break, about 12 minutes late now. We've also got, this being Thursday, the Green News Report via Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen on the way. After that, conversation and, who knows, more carrying on. It's all part of the process. It's all, well, part of the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Bye.
It's Thursday, June 11, 2015.
I guess the question would be, if he shouldn't talk about it, should you?
So why not take the overwhelming majority of scientists at their word?
Major media steps up, challenges presidential candidate Rick Santorum on climate science denial. The world's largest economies put an expiration date on fossil fuels. Want to see how climate change will affect your grandkids? NASA has just the thing. Plus, secret donors gave $125 million to climate denial front groups in just 3 years.
Man, I would have been a climate denier had I known it paid off so well. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I get it, Santorum. You thought the Pope was on your side, man. I know it must hurt when the man whose job is still steeped in medieval traditions is ahead of you on climate change.
Yep. This is your Green News Report.
Instead of telling the Pope to shut up, why don't you just start listening?
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, we now have word that this Santa Barbara oil spill about 3 weeks ago has so far cost $62 million to clean up, as it has sullied 97 miles of coastline, and there is no timetable for when the cleanup, if ever, will be complete.
Gee, I wonder how much a solar spill cost that day.
In any event, what do you got for us today, Des?
Well, first, climate change is now officially an actual thing in the 2016 presidential race. Republican presidential candidate and former Senator Rick Santorum was actually challenged about his recent remarks criticizing
Pope... Oh, he's challenged, all right.
Well, yeah, but he was challenged for criticizing Pope Francis over the Pope calling on Catholics to act on global warming and protect creation. Santorum said the Pope should leave science to the scientists. CNN's Jake Tapper challenged him.
So why not take the overwhelming majority of scientists at their word and take seriously that humans are contributing to climate change with potentially disastrous results?
Well, I would say this, that there are a lot of scientists who believe that. There's a lot of scientists who don't.
Not really.
And I think it's important that we take very measured responses. And some of the responses that are being proposed actually do very, very little to combat the problem.
Which is actually also not true. But surprisingly, Santorum was even challenged in the belly of the climate change denial beast of Fox News. Here he is on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace.
You know, the Pope has a right to talk about this?
Pope can talk about whatever he wants to talk about. I'm just saying, what should the Pope use his moral authority for? And I would make
the
argument...
Well, he would say he's protecting the Earth.
I would say that that's an important thing to do, but I think there are more pressing problems confronting the Earth than climate change.
Good luck with that, Rick.
Yeah, and of course what he's really saying is that the more important things are protecting profits for the fossil fuel industry.
Yep.
But undeterred are the folks at the fossil fuel-funded Heartland Institute, which hosted its 10th annual conference promoting climate change denial in the nation's capital this week. Republican Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma, who believes climate science is a hoax and a global conspiracy, received a special award for political leadership on climate change.
You mean the guy who said this?
The notion that man-made gases cause global warming is probably the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people.
Yep. And now we know that the Heartland Institute has received nearly $4 million since just 2011 to fund their climate change denial, and that was from secret donors. That's according to a new analysis of tax records by The Guardian, which finds that the network of think tanks and activist groups that spread disinformation about climate science have received more than $125 million in total in just the last 3 years. And that's from just two organizations called the Donors Trust and the Donors Capital Fund.
The Donors Trust is related to the Koch brothers,
yep,
as I recall. And who is this other group?
Donors Capital Fund is also related to the Koch brothers.
Imagine that.
Meanwhile, a big move from the G7. The leaders of the world's seven biggest economies have put an expiration date on fossil fuels. German Chancellor Angela Merkel and the U.S., U.K., France, Italy, Japan, and Canada announced this week that they have agreed to decarbonize their economies during this century with a goal of achieving zero carbon emissions by 2100. Now, that effectively declares the end of the fossil fuel era. It's only a declaration. But the G7 leaders say it will be part of a push for a strong UN climate treaty later this year. Finally, if you want to know how climate change will specifically impact your kids and grandkids and your town...
I do.
Now you can get really specific with a new climate impact tool released by NASA this week. It gets really, really detailed and lets you peer into the future from 2050 to 2100 to see the projected impacts in heat, drought, and rainfall for your town.
What a tool. For much more on that story and all of the others we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
There's only three things left now that I can do.
Oh, I love me some Green News Report. Brad and Desi do a wonderful job. 22 minutes past the hour, and hey, there's a challenge on the table. Jay Cruzan just put forward the Let's Finish Up the Week challenge. I announced earlier that we were two-thirds of the way toward done with fundraising for this evening. So there's $150 on the table, and if it is matched in the next hour and 37 minutes, it will become, your 150 becomes $300, and we're done fundraising for the week, and maybe we can try to, the eternal challenge of trying to build a little cushion. But, so hopefully. Thank you, Jay Cruzan. Thank you very kindly. Let's run over to the stress line, where I think we have, could it be Jim in Louisiana, Stan?
Yep.
How are you, Jim?
Really great, except for foreign policy, but we're starting out for 450. Why don't we just take it up to $500,000 so we just hit what we had in Vietnam, since I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah, just do it. Well, because frankly, yeah. I don't think we can do that right now, because we're still getting over having our military broken into a million tiny pieces by a dim leader and Richard B. Big Time Dick Cheney before he dicks you.
Right, but I mean, that's what's going to happen with the military if we do go with that. And foreign dicks, unless these are like, Terminator, like, dude, I don't think 450 is going to do that much, you know? Maybe I just don't have enough faith. Maybe I should get in touch with Santorum or something like that, huh?
I got a bad feeling. That's all I can say. I got a bad feeling.
Oh. Ditto here. It's, I'm kind of running to this throughout my life. You try and talk sense to people, they outright don't believe it. Maybe it's just where I'm located, or they don't think it's going to affect them one way or the other, just like the climate change, or any other. What we talked about a couple of days ago, something about where they're firing people, but they're having them train their people, holding up of a $5,000, $10,000 bonus, so they can get not even immigrants, the people that come in, they hire them for like half the price, and they train you to do their jobs, you know?
Yeah.
It's so blatant. It's so in your face. I'm too in tune. I just see it so obviously, but maybe because I don't have that big job at, Fox or NBC. By the way, the office.
Well,
stands,
and the big old Rupert Murdoch money check to go with it.
Exactly. Well, that goes without saying. You know, $1 million a year. I think I just might need 1 year and just you know, gracefully retire and find someplace else to live. Unfortunately, I have to stay on this planet, but maybe somewhere in Europe or where it's a little bit more enlightened. I mean, that's another thing. Europe seems a lot more, as you think, said democratic socialism that helps them be more enlightened.
You'd like to think that maybe after the Second World War, a whole lot of lights collectively kind of went on. I don't know if we can count on that or not. I don't think fascism once. I don't think you can kill fascism without driving a stake through its heart and encasing it in garlic. But the social welfare state saved people's lives out of the ashes of the Second World War, and that they most certainly do remember, I think.
Well, exactly, and the social welfare state saved people's lives with FDR, but ever since the 70s, we've been running away from it, and... I mean, I could see through it.
But you know the answer to why on that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you want to give your version, and I'll give mine.
Well, a number of things. One being that I remember when they were cheering the women working thing. That's all fine, and then a two-family income, you know, two workers, and. But then, you know, that creates other problems, and there's nothing, like I said, there's nothing wrong with women working, but you need somebody there if you're going to have kids, somebody there to take care of the kids. You know, unless you're going to get like some sort of Amway scam going.
I'm a little more simple with my explanation.
Okay.
There was a time when this country believed in its in infrastructure and its ability to do things. And that is when the things that this country was doing, it was doing for white folks. Okay? And couple that with the fact that Republicans have never liked the idea of any kind of social welfare at all. But when Social Security was first instituted, it was people who worked as domestics were specifically excluded from it. That meant black folks. Okay?
Exactly. Yeah.
When Republicans began getting wind as the civil rights struggle took shape and took off, when Republicans figured out that somebody besides white folks were getting public assistance, suddenly it became a nightmare. And all the way up to 2012, when Rick Santorum's wandering around, Wisconsin, Iowa, talking about he didn't want his people didn't want their tax dollars going to support blah people. Remember that?
Yeah, I can't believe you could have a slip-up like that. I mean,
That wasn't a slip-up.
Freudian slip-up.
That wasn't a slip-up. He's right. Republicans resent blah people getting public assistance, because everybody knows that blah people are shiftless.
Yeah, I know that, but I mean, but he doesn't think anybody else realizes what he was implying.
What? He was talking to the base. Poor punching is a successful political strategy on the right in the white wing in this country. I mean, it never cost Ronald Reagan anything, Jim, with his welfare Cadillacs and his welfare queens.
You're right. I caught the last half hour of the professor yesterday. He was hammering on that real, you know, that last half hour. And sure enough, if I'm not mistaken, that's exactly what he was hammering on. Maybe it was from the day before, but that's what I got out of it, you know. I don't know. And like I said, I've got intelligent brothers and sisters, but I guarantee you 100%. They don't see it because they don't want to see it. And they've all, to a certain extent, got that Protestant ethic stuff. And,
Right, and of course, the neo-Calvinist Protestant ethic says that if you're poor, it's because God doesn't like you. You're not part of the elect.
I'm going to bring that up at the next family gathering. Just, I'm like, I guess God doesn't like me, because that's why he gave me this grant. I guess it's going to make things so significantly more difficult. Would any of y'all like to trade places with me?
No, Jim, that's all right. You're doing just fine by where, right where you are. Somebody's got to be that. It's an entire nation of there, but for the grace of God goes John Smith. Let somebody else be poor. Let somebody else be black.
Well, see, the weird thing is, in this capitalist society, you can be doing real well. A couple of things don't go right, health-wise or whatever-wise, even with Obamacare and stuff.
Right, and the minute that happens to you, all the people that you liked and all the people that you thought liked you, well, they just stop talking to you. Because you've stopped being, obviously you have been removed from the chosen frozen. You're not a member of the elect anymore.
Yeah. Well, this kind of reminds me of that conversation you had with, I forgot, was the last guy, I think it was Monday, and he was kind of, he's definitely struggling, but you analyze. I think it was a letter.
Steve's letter that we began Monday's conversation with.
Yeah, because sometimes I don't catch the beginning of the show. I miss like a half hour or so. And I was, sometimes I, let me see what I missed. And that's just like, whoa, that's right. He was right on. I mean, you were right on in your answer to him. And it's easy to slip into feeling the way he was, admitting feeling, although he didn't want to feel that way, it seemed. But, that's kind of the mechanism. That's the way it's designed.
It really is. It's how it works. This is not accidental. And see, I have this theory, and I propounded it years ago, Jim, that the Republicans are absolutely hell-bent on tearing down everything about this country before white people become a decided minority and, those people start getting all the good things.
Yeah, the blah people, yeah, exactly. And that covers anybody who isn't a wasp, basically. So,
our world and welcome to it.
Well, I'm thinking that,
remember, as I previously noted, Jim, there is no political price to pay on the right wing for despising poor people, especially when you can make the rubes think that when you say poor, you mean black.
Right. Or just even not white. Not lost. But I mean, particularly, like I said, the Professor Bill, is that his name?
Yeah, Dr. Bill.
Dr. Bill. Like I said, I just caught that last half hour. I'd like to catch him every day, but,
if you've got a computer or whatever, you can always run and grab the podcast from White Rose Society.
Oh, I know, but it takes 3 hours to get dressed, 4 hours, 6 hours, that's 1 point.
Oh, you're running out of day.
I have to sleep sometimes, and I have to try and hold on to, some sense of sanity in that thing. Is maybe hope. I'm still really behind Bernie. I think he's the way to go. Full steam ahead. I hope he can do it. But the way, only way I can really see him do it is somehow is a huge ground swell, and what's his name, Hartman talks about it, you know, great epiphany for the American people, and somehow not only does Bernie get in, but he gets a majority in both the House and the Senate, which I see very hard to do. Because other than that, Obama, in the grand scheme of things, was actually halfway decent considered to what we had before, but that's not saying much. But he tried some other, you know, he could have maybe gotten, the healthcare, you know, an American version of the European version of healthcare, but there was no way he was going to do that, so he had to decide to compromise and take what he could get, so he didn't end up like Hillary Clinton with her, and I'm not knocking her, with her attempt at healthcare. Then right away, the Republicans, the right-wingers, and most of my family, God, I hate family Catholics. This is all a bunch of white-wing backups, but
You make it sound like it should probably be a reality show, Jim.
I'm working on that. And the answer to my prayers to the non-existent skies, but yeah, I could be the atheist amongst all the they were. They got their Christianity, some of them did. They got their little Christianity thing, and, the subtle ways, you know, they have of like, kind of like, quote unquote, planting the seed, or trying to plant the seed. And, well, I'll notice when my sister, my mother, and my aunt are going to be acting it up, and they'll be talking about a church sermon, and, I mean, they live vicariously through the church sermon, you know? You know, or they could see different church sermons. And you have to think, the Bible, it's a limited number of pages. I mean, after you go a couple of years, haven't you heard every one, or gain deeper insight to the same one over?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm asking you, you have more experience with church than me, or at least Christian.
Well, and I'm trying to recover from it, too.
I hope I'm helping. I'm part of your recovery.
You absolutely
are. And on that note, I'm gonna let you go, clear the lines, and talk to you later.
All right, Jim, you have yourself a good evening, and we'll talk soon, okay?
All right.
Bye now. Calling from what I can only assume is even steamier than here, Louisiana Stan. That's our buddy Jim. Yeah, 21 minutes until 8 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, and we're not clicking downward from 95 much at all. Yeesh. 21 minutes before the hour. Both lines are open now, 304-574-8178 and 304-663-HORN, the latter being the stress line. Given the fact that Brad and Desi were talking about climate change denial, and in particular with regard to Bro-Fro-Mix, an interesting article from Bloomberg News. And this is the one that'll get their attention, or this is the kind of thing that will get the right wing's attention, because they don't care about anything about money, but money. And they don't care about breathable air. As long as they're breathing, it's breathable air. They don't care about clean water. As long as they can have clean water, everybody else can pound sludge. But money matters. And Barry Ritholtz has summed up a report by the Mercer Research Group in Bloomberg News. Quote, says Barry Ritholtz, in the real world, climate change deniers are and will be giant money losers. Among other things, the report notes that climate change will give rise to investment winners and losers, Industries like coal will likely see average annual returns over the next decade eroding between 26% and 138%. This according to the analysis of the analysis by Joe Rahm at Think Progress. Like the phases of dealing with death, there are phases of dealing with climate change for a denier. Climate unaware future takers, climate aware future takers, and finally climate aware future makers. Let them get hit in the portfolio. Don't try to hit them in the heart. They don't have those. Don't try to hit them in the brains. They don't have those either. Hit them where it hurts, in the wallet. And we don't have to hit them with anything. The climate will do that by itself. I mean, for pity's sakes, let me see if I can find it here. Stocks. Come on, stocks. Oh, dang it. Well, suffice to say that, for instance, Alpha Natural Resources is a penny stock now. Once upon a time, it traded up in the $70 neighborhood. Now it trades in the 70-cent neighborhood. And dig it, that 70-cent neighborhood is as good as it is going to get. Not going to get better because the coal industry is falling to pieces. And it's largely a hell of their own making, and it couldn't happen to a nicer bunch. But there's going to be all kinds of payoff or payback. Among other things, Joe Rahm cites John Van Leer, a University of Miami oceanographer, who said, the insurance business is going to play a big role. If buyers can't insure it, they can't get a mortgage on it. And if they can't get a mortgage, you can only sell to cash buyers. What I'm looking for is a climate change denier with a lot of money. And then Barry Ritholtz, whom Joe Rahm identifies as an investment guru, says, I expect those who suffer from cognitive dissonance over whether global warming is real will soon be greeted by a brutal Darwinian result in the markets. I don't make many forecasts, but here's one. It's only a matter of time before the deniers exist only in think tanks funded by the fossil energy industry and oddball conspiracy groups. I thought that's where we already were. Let's run over to the Skype line. Hey, Jay Cruzan. There you are. Here I am. There
you
are. Yeah,
I can just barely hear you on my end.
Yeah, I hear you now.
Yeah, you're so freaking soft, though.
You need to turn up your speaker function.
I turned it up as wide open as it goes.
Well, the problem is that if I monkey with the gain much here, I become very, very distorted out there in radio land.
All right. Well, I got you up loud enough that I can hear you.
Okay, good.
As long as you don't talk while I'm talking, I can hear you.
You start.
Well, I didn't really call to talk about a heck of a lot of much. I hope that somebody meets the challenge that I put forth.
I do, too.
Yeah. Hey, you know that information that I sent you earlier about, I don't know how many people in the community even realize that what I sent you earlier and you read is that no white police officer has ever been convicted of the murder of an unarmed black man in the history of the United States.
I find that to be a stunning statistic.
And And I did too, but I heard it on another radio show, and then it got confirmed. And it's really appalling to me, obviously. That's a really nasty thing, isn't it?
Has a black officer ever been convicted of shooting an unarmed white person?
Do we really need to ask that question?
Well, I only ask it for the sake of balance.
Well, I haven't researched that, but I'm absolutely sure it has been done. I don't know. I just thought, with this case in northern Charleston coming to be the way that it has, that the grand jury indicted the guy and indicted him on murder, that it would be the first in the history of this country. And that's pretty astonishing to me.
Just like with Tamir Rice, we're still a long way from anything where
yeah.
North Charleston is concerned or where Cleveland's concerned. I think it took a lot of nerve, Jay Cruzen, for instance, for the prosecutor in Cuyahoga County to say, well, the judge's recommendations were only that. Recommendations. I mean, last I checked, when a judge says that something should happen, it means it should happen, not might happen.
Yeah.
Maybe a little contempt citation would help clear things up for the Cuyahoga County prosecutor.
Yeah, maybe so. Well, us being two white men, I was actually hoping to conjure the angry Indian to come in and speak about it, but we can go on and talk about other things.
Do please.
Hey, my son made All-Stars again this year.
Oh, cool. What position?
I think they're going to use him as pitching. Well, he plays a lot. He plays shortstop in Little League. He plays outfield in travel ball. And I think they're going to use him as a pitcher in All-Stars.
Oh, glory.
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad, being as young as he is, and they talked about it, and my wife was telling me, because I don't get up there much to see him play, of course, because I'm in Florida and she's in North Carolina, which is totally a function of our economy.
Right.
That all these batting lessons and everything I've been paying for him, he's got the prettiest swing of everybody out there. You know,
oh, nice.
That,
does he bat right or left?
He bats right. And, you know, when you watch Major League, you know that little compact swing that's become so popular?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how much you know about baseball.
Good bit. Kind of tucked in and not a lot of wasted energy.
Yeah, kind of tucked in. Leg is forward at the beginning. Leg pulls back, and then leg forward at the release of the swing. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing some of that when I go up there.
Oh, that'll be. How long does the season go on?
Well, it's All Stars now. Little League's over.
Oh, yeah, you said that, so.
Yeah, so he's up in All-Stars, hopefully. Well, they made it to state last year. He's got the same coach, and a lot of the team is the same, but they changed some of the age stuff, so he's 9, and he's on an 8-9 team instead of a 9-10 team. We'll see what happens. Some of the younger players need some real coaching, but he's got the coach to do it. Only other thing I've got really going on is we got a lot of union infighting here. It's like companies are looking to buy up their union representatives. I don't know what the hell's going on with this, but
well, does it smell and feel like union busting?
Yeah, big time. Well, no, not really. It's almost been a company union from the beginning. Even though it is IBEW, and I love the IBEW to death, I'd never leave it. The influence of the company down here in my local, and I'm not affiliated enough with the other locals to speak to them. I have a feeling that there is a lot of that going on. It's not, they don't want to bust us. They just pretty much want to buy out our representatives. Which is worse, if you ask me.
Yeah, so what, like the shop steward, or?
Yeah, so like the shop steward got moved up to a half union, half management position, and is expected to still be shop steward. So he represents our shop, but is also over the entire county management-wise for the 3 to 11.
And there's nothing the rank and file can do about it.
3 p.m. to 2300 position. Yeah. Well, we're trying to do something about it. We're going to see what happens.
Yeah, that just sounds.
But it doesn't look good, especially when the president says, "Well, I'm not going to remove him just because you guys voted 32-7 that we don't want him anymore."
Well, what the hell is half management and half union anyway?
These are positions where they're typically like we have them for dispatchers and for. You know, these created things like they have, but, you know, to be honest with you, I don't have any problem with the position, but if you're in that position, if you're half union, half management, then that's what you are. You stay the hell out of union affairs, in my opinion. You should not be a steward, right? That's the way I feel about it. And we feel, a lot of us just feel that's a conflict of interest. Half union, half management is like,
it's a fantasy, because half union, half management. If it was truly 50-50, then when you guys voted to say goodbye, he would have been gone.
Mm-hmm.
So that means he's actually all management, but still enjoying the perks of.
Well, no, membership. because the president of the union says that it's okay. You tell me how that works.
Yeah, that's a little
shady. Yeah, well, the thing is that, to be honest with you, we would have liked to get a lot of people in semi-management roles and still be union people. You understand what I'm saying? That you don't have the power of disciplining your fellow employees. But you oversee them. And you know what? To be honest with you, I don't know. I think...
Well, that's kind of like the wait till your father gets home defense.
Yeah, it's really weird. But it's been going on for a long time down here. So, I mean, what are you going to do in a right-to-work state? I mean, the unions are going to take every position they can get.
Right damn next door to nothing. Well, let me ask you, since I was going on and about climate change, and Brad and Desi were talking about climate change, do we have a South Florida climate change report?
Well, yesterday we had a storm that ran across the state that covered half of the entire state for about, oh, I don't know, 7 or 8 hours. And it just kind of rose up out of the west and floated across the state and just hovered around and stormed like a son of a bitch over half the state and then, you know, just kind of dissipated. There's so much moisture in there down here, it's pathetic.
But I mean, like,
which you could contribute to climate change is the amount of moisture down here. Yeah.
But so when it does that, what happens in the low-lying coastal areas?
We didn't get hit with it yesterday. The low-lying, any area down here, if we get hit with too much rain, we flood, period. I mean, and it happens fast. And we got all kind of infrastructure set up with sewer lift stations that pump the water out as fast as possible, you know. I guess it pumps it out to sea. I don't know. I'm not in that part of it. But if you get hit with a hell of a lot of rain really fast, I mean, we're pretty much wet up to your knees, anywhere you want to look. But as far as coastal flooding, that's still... It's still got a lot to do with tides and storms and stuff. Sure. We're a couple feet away from being, you know, as far as sea level rises goes, we're a couple feet sometimes a year and a few inches other times a year. It depends on the tidal stages. It's, you know, it's hit and miss.
Sure.
But if any type of storm at all comes in here now, we're so close already that, you know, we're flooded, period.
And hurricane season is in full swing now, right?
A hurricane with a 2-foot storm surge would flood all of Miami. Hit head on. Let's just put it that way. Plain and simple. 2-foot storm surge. That's not even a hurricane. That's a tropical storm. Right?
Yeah, well, yeah.
So, there you go. That's where we are. That's probably where we've been for years, but the sea levels are definitely rising. You can see it. Yeah, I've posted pictures before. I know that this place is done for within 20 to 30 years. If not in my lifetime, my kids will definitely see the entirety of South Florida flooded. There's no question about it.
And it's and we're not. I mean, anybody familiar with New Orleans, for instance, knows that, you know, a good August rainstorm can flood the streets,
mm-hmm.
and then the pumps kick in. But that's not what we're talking about, is it?
No, not in Miami. From what I've heard, Miami's a lot worse. The water seeps up just on high tides. That's
you mean inland?
Yeah, inland.
I got a very good friend who just bought a house down there in the general area, and he's thrilled and tickled, and I don't want to rain on his parade or anything, but, you know, I don't know. I guess more that people are, you know, the real estate market, is it moving, or is it dead, or?
No, it's just going along like nothing's happening. It's just like everybody's got blinders on. I mean, unless you talk to people like that mayor of South Miami that's talking about South Florida needs to secede from North Florida and become a second state. I mean, unless you listen to people like that who really have their head on their shoulders, that really understand what's happening and what's going to go on, there's, you know, everybody's just pretty much sticking their head in the sand and going on as business as usual. But
and just hoping that it doesn't happen to them.
Exactly. But that's a kind of sick position to take, because you know if it's not happening to you, it's going to happen to your kids if you got any.
Right. I mean, it is going to happen. That's what that whole report that Bloomberg focused on that I was talking about was. I mean. There's no maybe about it anymore.
No. No,
you know, 350.org needs to change its name to 450.org.
350. You know, we actually had, I can't point you to the reports, but I know that there were reports that said that we maintained 400 ppm in the atmosphere for an entire month, globally. So, we're way past 350.org. And Bill McKibben, yeah, I love him to death, but I'm starting to look more at the Guy McPherson view of it, that we're pretty much just on hospice care, and I hate to do that, but...
Well, absent significant action. I mean, South Florida, one of the things that the right wing says, Jay Cruzan, is that, well, you know, if it really is real, we'll develop the technology we need to take care of what needs taken care of. And one of the things they talk about is building great damn big seawalls.
What the fuck is that?
Anybody building great damn big seawalls down there?
Well, even if they did, then what is that? Then you no longer have the appeal of the state or the area. I mean, you're gonna live in a city that is pretty much a slum, and with some rich areas that are going to be evacuated because they had their nice coastal, you know, their nice little coastal views and all that stuff, and you're gonna look at a big ass seawall. There's no manufacturing economy down here, so all the money's gonna leave. All the money is all the big money that's here just spending it on whatever.
That's big
seawall. What are you talking about?
Don't blame me. That's what the right wing super geniuses are going to do. They're going to build a 100-foot seawall out there. They're going to stop.
And then,
you know, they're going to.
Well, you don't have any ports anymore. What are you going to do then?
Well, we'll build ports outside the great damn big seawall, and we'll canoe everybody into Miami.
Yeah.
You know, through locks, like we have on rivers.
Well, if you look at what's going on in Greenland and what's going on in Antarctica, I'm sorry, but it's not happening.
Well, that's the problem with your great damn big seawall, is the next time Antarctica calves off another great big ice cube into our little seawater cocktail, great damn big seawall gets overtopped.
Well, now I'm hearing that both sheets are going to melt on Antarctica, the east and the west.
Well, sure they are.
And that they can't be stopped. And then we're talking about, I don't know, between those and Greenland, you're talking about 33 meters of sea level rise.
Yeah, I remember back before he passed away, the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, you know, one of his greatest performances is called Arizona Bay.
Yeah, it sounds like a nice place to live.
Well, because Arizona's going to be a bay.
Hmm. They got any land for sale there?
But I mean, you've seen the map projections. I mean,
yes,
the Mississippi Delta goes up into Arkansas.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to happen a hell of a lot faster than what people think, too. You know, there's no stopping it. Hey, by the way, I saw a program this afternoon on Al Jazeera about mountaintop removal.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just this afternoon. I tried to find the link to it, but it hasn't been posted there yet. But they were bashing your mountaintop removal people again on Al Jazeera America today.
Liberals.
Hey, if you go into their archives, you can find one for every month except for May. They had June now, obviously. It hasn't been posted yet. And then they had April, March, January, February. They were all there. They keep running these things on it. You gotta go check his, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
what a pity that's Al. And I'm not damning with faint praise, but what a pity that that's Al Jazeera. Wouldn't it be nice if that was ABC, CBS, and NBC?
Well, they're not going to talk about it, Bob. Come on, man.
Right, I mean... You know,
are you serious?
Yeah, they're getting paid. They're getting the money checks.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we can do something. Maybe we can draw some attention somehow.
It'd be nice. It would indeed be nice. Jay Cruzen, have yourself a good evening, and thanks for putting the challenge on the table. We've only got $125 left to go on it. Thanks very kindly to Frank. Thank you, Frank. And if we can meet Jay Cruzen's challenge, we'll be done fundraising for the week, which would be awfully nice. You, in the meantime, Jay Cruzen, stay cool to the best of your human ability, and keep us updated on the boys' progress in All Stars.
All right, good night, Bob.
All right, take it easy. Bye now. Calling from sunny South Florida, and occasionally soggy South Florida. That's our buddy Jay Cruzen. It's 7 minutes past the hour, and I don't like to do this, and I hate to do this, but I'm going to do this. It is, all kidding aside, it is godforsaken miserable back here. And it's kind of making me feel not very good. And so I'm going to knock off for the night and get out of here and into something, into a space that's considerably cooler, because, you know, 8 o'clock and still in the 90s in the studio, it ain't, well, I don't know about y'all, but it ain't good for me. So with that having been said, I will apologize, and, you know, we'll be back for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow evening and everything. Hopefully in the meantime, folks will join up with Frank and finish off Jay Cruzen's finish the week challenge. I don't fool around with the heat prostration. It's not a good or a healthy thing, and it's no joke. I mean, it's not naked radio, but about as close as I can get without y'all having to use the eye bleach, and just feeling kind of icky. You know what profound heat will do to you. And between now and then, I'm hoping that, Agnes has been working on some stuff, and maybe it'll get better. But thank you all for your kind attention and for joining in the conversation this evening. I hope the 2 hours and 9 minutes have been worth it for you, the precious finite time that you share in conversation. And thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thanks to Linda and Tony. Thanks to Dennis and Kevin. Thanks to Horst and Chris. And thanks to Jay Cruzen for the challenge, and thanks to Frank for stepping up to meet a part of it. It's all much appreciated, and that's how we keep this little broadcast effort going. And so with that, I will simply bid you good evening and say that, well, Friday on the Front Porch is tomorrow, and I hope you'll all be right here for it. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, roasting, signing off. Bye now.